Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts.
So you do. I'll bet you do too.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. It's 109. What'd you say the current temperature is there, Jen DeSalvo? It is currently, what was the...
49 degrees.
49 degrees. Producer Elif, what is the average high temperature for today, please? Get that to me in a second. It's not what I'd call a big thought, but we'll start there. Hey, listen, a lot to talk about today, including it looks like David Ross. It's not official yet, but the former Cubs catcher and Dancing with the Star is going to be the new general manager of your Chicago Cubs. You know, we're the White Sox station, and I'm not a fool about this. It's a Cubs town. So I am going to talk a little bit about this with you today. And our news click at WGNradio.com is going to be, you think that was the right move or not right move? You hate to say bad move, wrong move, because God bless him. There's nothing to not like about David Ross. There is nothing to not like about David Ross.
What's he been doing for the past couple of years?
I don't know. I think he's been chilling. He's been working in the front office for the Cubs.
Okay.
I think he's been doing a little scouting. He's been doing some dancing. If I were him, I'd be doing some golfing. I'd be going to my kids' stuff. If I didn't have kids, I'd be having kids.
Wasn't he also doing some broadcasting?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that sounds like a fun existence to me. You've got all the money you'll need, and now you do the stuff you want to do. I mean, you'd probably still like to play baseball, but you're not going to play baseball. What else would you like to do? And I think he gets to set his own table. Wonder if he would have wanted to be on this team anyway. I mean, that was just a hard drive to a wall, and then it ended right there. So now he's going to be the manager of that, and I'm just thinking, okay, this is the only... This is the caveat, right? Like, there's nothing to not like about David Ross, except is he the right guy for the team? And then it's not his fault. You know, you take the gig, I guess, if you could get it. But in the back of my mind, I think they need somebody to crack the whip. Enough to say, okay, God bless Joe Maddon, and we got a World Series out of that, and we had the best 5 years the team's ever had, and all that wonderful stuff. But maybe with that much talent on the field, we just need a slightly different attitude on the bench. And I don't know that David Ross is that. He's a colleague of these guys. He's a fellow player of these guys. I don't know that he has that sort of crew-cut Joe Girardi attitude that I would put on this club. By the way, Producer Elif, did you find the average high temperature for today?
57 degrees, John.
Yeah, 57. Mark Carmen just strolled into the studio from WGN Radio Sports.
You know, I never knew that Elif actually did that live in that voice. I don't need to pull the curtain back here, but that was seriously amazing.
It's kind of freaky.
It really was.
Seriously. You get it? Seriously?
Yeah, no, I get it, and I'm a little freaked out here, John, but great to be here. Great to see you. Go David Ross.
I'm not going to talk about this at great length, but I asked you to come in and talk about this.
Okay. Well, good to be here.
You just heard my attitude. I want crew cut Joe Girardi. What do you think of Ross?
So, listen, I wouldn't have fired Joe Maddon, and I probably would have hired Joe Girardi. However, I think it's a great hire. David Ross is incredibly well fit to step in here, having played for Bobby Cox, having played for Joe Maddon, having won a World Series in Boston, having been a catcher, having been a guy that spent 15 years in the big leagues, and has been in the Cubs front office in a special assistant role. I don't know exactly what he's been doing, but he's been hanging around for 3 years. I think he's going to do great, John. Alex Cora's done great in Boston. Aaron Boone's done great in New York.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
There's an example of this where somebody with no managerial experience but is a city favorite steps in and does a good job. That's happened before?
Yeah, the city favorite part, I'm scratching my... I mean, yeah, Aaron Boone was a city favorite in New York. Guy had a grand slam to help the Yankees
okay,
in the
so what are his weaknesses? What are the things that worry you about this hire?
How he will handle the daily grind of being in that spot and making decisions every day. This is a pretty intense dude. So you're talking
who is
David Ross?
Really, he's an intense dude.
Yes, absolutely.
I didn't know that about him.
He's got the nice guy thing going on, but he also, I think, is pretty wound up inside there. And you don't get to be pals with John Lester and last in the big leagues when you're I don't want to completely dog his talent, but he's not nearly as talented as the guys he's competing against. So you got to be a I do the right things the right way every single day type of dude, and you got to be super type A to do that. And that's how he survived and succeeded in the biggest moments.
How much pressure is there?
Yeah.
Really, you don't think that people are going to go, all right, we got rid of Madden for a reason. You had better get to the playoffs next year.
Well, let David Ross remember one thing that Joe Madden said. Don't let the pressure exceed the pleasure. He's making millions of dollars to coach a team that's got a ton of talent around him. Things aren't going to go your way all the time, but just have a positive attitude.
How important is it that he get the team to the playoffs?
Extremely important.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure.
Of course. You're in the big leagues. You're a manager. You're playing. That's a high pressure
tougher
spot.
To be the Cubs manager than the White Sox manager right now.
Right.
Certainly this year. Certainly 2019.
Right.
Tougher to be the Cubs manager.
Right now, yes, but that's quickly changing. Ricky Renteria, who's doing a great job, by the way, there's expectations now that the White Sox are going to start turning the corner and compete to be in the playoffs. So that's not that free ride as far as we don't care about how many wins. That's nearly over on the South Side.
Is Renteria going to be the manager next year?
Yeah, absolutely, he'll be the manager.
How
next
about the year after that?
Well, I think that could be up in the air. I wouldn't expect Ricky to go anywhere, but if things go sideways next season, well, then you might be looking at the manager seat. I'm sure Ricky's well aware of that.
Okay, but don't you think that, I don't know what they talked to David Ross about, but did they say, I mean, I guess it goes without saying that we're hiring you to get this team to the pennant. We want at least a pennant run here.
Yes, and I also think they're trying to set the Cubs up for the next great Cubs World Series championship. They're reworking the organization.
When will that happen?
Well, it's an interesting offseason. You got Chris Bryant, who's got 2 years left on his contract. Javi Baez, in the same scenario.
I keep saying general manager, don't I? Manager.
Yeah, you can't pay everyone, John. So at some point here, these guys are either going to have to get on board and sign a contract that the team is willing to pay them, or then the Cubs have to think about moving along from some of these guys. And that'll be very interesting if it happens this offseason and how that'll impact expectations for 2020.
So, Mark Harmon, would you say that if the Cubs don't win another World Series with Rizzo and Bryant and Baez and, you know, that nucleus of players, that it will be a lost opportunity? It'll be a missed chance?
It'll be disappointing, but at the end of the day, they did win the World Series, and it took the monkey off every Cubs fan's back. So you have to, at the end of the day,
That's not enough. I mean, I get it. I mean, a century is really a very big monkey, but you had, remember that year, the All-Star team? Do you remember who started for the National League? The Cubs did.
Yes.
And they had a lot of that back, and they still have a lot of that on the field, and we didn't even make the playoffs this year.
Right, but 3 years ago yesterday, right, they win the pennant. They beat the Dodgers 5-0 in Game 6 to go to the World Series. They hadn't even won the World Series. I'm walking around Wrigley Field, John, covering for WGN Radio, and people are weeping. And I'm asking the question, is this the greatest day of your life? And the answer from a lot of them was absolutely yes. Have you had kids? Yes, I have. This day is better. That's how it was.
I know that, but you are answering a different question.
You're asking how it's going to be looked back upon. And I think when you really look back on it, people say, well, thank
God for Joe Madden.
Thank God for that team. The whole thing. So but to your other point, with the talent that they had, and look, they had the best young talent in all of baseball, and they had a plethora of money to spend, and they have driven the team, they being Theo and Jed, they have driven the team into the middle of the pack since then, and that's extremely disappointing.
Okay, so who's that on then?
That's on Theo.
Yeah, this isn't a Madden. I mean, I know you got to fire the manager, and get a new manager. But this is really Theo's failing.
It's on Jason Hayward. It's on Yu Darvish. It's on.
Okay, but what about this? Tell me if this is a fair. Pardon me for keep cutting you off.
No, it's great. Go. Your show, John.
It's nobody's fault. The players got injured.
No, but that's not okay. That's not accurate. Look, they spent $180 million on Jason Hayward. That was a bad choice. They spent $126 million on Yu Darvish. That was a bad choice.
Darvish wasn't healthy all the time.
Right, but Yu Darvish has been a guy that in the biggest moments has proven himself to be not
He didn't have a good second half this year, Darvish?
He did. He had a great second half this year. So, okay, he's been here for 2 years. He's had one good second half. That's a low bar.
Okay, but I'm still thinking of, I would not describe the Cubs this year as injury plagued, but a lot of guys missed a lot of games.
Okay, but how about this? Brandon Morrow, the closer. How about this? Let's look up at Milwaukee. Let's look at Christian Yelich. He was traded from Miami to Milwaukee for a bunch of prospects who the Cubs have held on to, and Ian Happ and Albert Elmora and Kyle Schwarber. We can't get rid of any of our young guys. They could have made a very aggressive move at some point and really landed somebody like Yelich, and they just didn't do it. So that's a swing and
a miss.
I just
think between, okay, maybe some bad hires, and then maybe some unfortunate injuries, and then maybe some really fluky things like Russell. And
that's another thing they handled terribly. I knew, John, in 2016 that Addison Russell was sideways. Now you tell me the Cubs didn't know? Maybe they didn't. But if they didn't, then that's on them for not knowing, too.
But wasn't it a weird year, don't you think? I mean, the MVP of the World Series takes half the season off, right? I mean, that doesn't strike you as just, that's not Madden's problem. Theo didn't know that was going to happen. I mean, come on.
I think that they're admitting this now. They have a lot of redundancy on that lineup.
Yeah.
They looked at players the same way. And they became very susceptible to being beaten one way through that lineup, and their offense has been inconsistent for a long time now.
Okay, so it's not official yet, right? Ross is not officially signed as the manager of the Cubs, right?
Well, when Cap reports it, I mean, it's got to be. Do we really even need to hear from Theo?
All of the major media sources, we called over there, and they said no in a way that they meant yes. So, yeah, that's going to happen in the very near future. So I'll let you go with this.
Okay.
What do the Cubs need?
Oh, well, they need guys who make contact. They need a leadoff hitter. They need another guy in the rotation. They need some guys in the back end of that bullpen that throw really, really hard and get guys out. So there's a lot there's a lot that they need to add here to really think that they can contend when you look at what the Astros are doing, when you look at, I guess, even the Nationals now. I mean, look at a guy like Juan Soto last night, John. He hits a 3-2 pitch off the wall going the other way and a phenomenal at-bat. The Cubs, they just, there's a lot of swing and miss in that lineup right now.
It's funny when you watch the playoffs because the Cubs are a good team, and I thought, didn't you, they were going to at least vie for the pennant this year? I mean, you know, it was a weird year, but the Cubs were a good team in a good division.
They were, but it also felt like the whole time that they were just sort of just hanging on and barely getting through it.
And then you watch these final four teams and final two now, and you go, oh, wow, we don't have that. They look better than us.
Right, and there's another one. I mean, look at the Astros, Justin Verlander. That guy was begging to come to the Cubs from Detroit. The Cubs, for whatever reason, didn't want to pay the freight there or thought he was done, and they traded Eloy Jimenez, who had 31 homers for the White Sox this year as a rookie, and Dylan Cease for Jose Quintana, who has been the definition of average. Swing and a miss again.
That's
not on the, you know, it's on the front office.
Boy, the Sox came out on the right side on that deal,
yes,
didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Boy, it was a fun night for me last night. I got to go, Carm, but so I'm switching back and forth between the big three. The Blackhawks, all the way to the 100th second. That was a fun game.
It was. I was kind of wondering what people were watching last night. Was it the World Series? It was the opening of the NBA. The
Clippers
run.
And the Lakers.
Clippers and Lakers.
You had the Pelicans as well.
That was a great game, too, even without Zion.
Yeah. So it's the best time of the year. And Mark Carmen was kind enough to change his day to pop into our studio. Thanks for coming in, Carm.
Good to see you, John.
We'll talk more about the strike in a few minutes. We've got WGN Radio News around the corner. I was listening to Bill and Wendy, and a woman called in, and she was talking about the teachers making so much money. Why don't they give some of the money back if they want more librarians or more aides or more social workers? Would they be willing to do that? And Wendy said, well, why should they? Wouldn't you want to... If you're working that hard, wouldn't you want to take as much money as you can get? We all would say yes to that. But as I was listening to them, I just wanted to say, I'm not saying that the teachers don't work hard. I think everybody works hard these days. It's not just the teachers. The teachers sort of paint themselves, or we all allow them to have this argument in the corner where it's, well, we are working so hard now. Listen, everybody is working really hard now. Most of us are working longer and harder, not necessarily for more money these days. And a lot of you have two jobs like that. Some of you have 2.5 jobs like that. Talk to nurses. Talk to talk show producers. Talk to construction guys. And I'm sorry, I know you hate to hear this, But teachers don't work as many months of the year or weeks of the year as other people do. Teachers get time off in the summer. They get time off in Thanksgiving. They get a spring break. Now, during that time, teachers still end up working, don't they? They're still on the job. But so does everybody else. Ask someone in corporate finance or a small business person if they work during weekends and on vacations. Classroom size, to me, is something I would fight for. I don't want this strike to go any longer, but having 50 or 40 or 42 kids in a classroom is just too many. I was going to call in and say that on Bill and Wendy's show, but then I thought, oh, I've got my own.
During World War II, the men were all overseas. Nobody knew if they were dead or alive, where they were located. So they used the Ouija board in the living room of our apartment on the west side of Chicago, and the Ouija board told them where my mother's brother was located exactly, but nobody knew it, because nobody knew if he was either dead or alive or where he was located. And she told me the Ouija board told them where he was located.
How about that? Yesterday's show, people calling in sharing Ouija board stories. It's the one toy gadget thing that kind of freaks me out a little bit. Got a little shook as a kid. Elif had a story that was so upsetting to her, even as an adult now, she can't share it. I don't know, is that true, Elif? Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah. But it's about my mom, though.
Right, she's right.
So I've never played a Ouija board since she told me that
story.
What
happened to her, yeah.
I just use them to summon dark spirits, so.
Phil Vitel's here, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. Phil, a couple of calls before we go to you. Is that okay?
Sure.
Before you came in, we were talking about the Cubs. Looks like David Ross is going to be the boss of the team now.
The uniform fits.
815, David Ross cracked the whip when he was a player. I'm sure he'll do more so as a manager. I question if he was maybe too close to some of the players. 262 said, hey, John, we thought Craig Counsell was a huge mistake for the Brewers. That was wrong. 773, sorry, but David Ross is not the guy. 708, John forgot about the player-manager Ozzie Guillen. Ozzie was a friend of the players, that's for sure. And they won the World Series. They didn't win it the next year, the year after that, or the year after that, though. 630, I am so sick of hearing that we are supposed to be satisfied when we won the World Series in 2016. Come on, let's go. And I made a couple of comments just before the news about the strike and how hard teachers work. Teachers work insanely hard in circumstances that are changing right before their eyes. My point was, so too are a lot of other people. Ah. So while I appreciate that, I mean, can I say that without taking away the fact that teachers are under challenging circumstances? When I get to be king, Phil, grade schoolers and junior high school kids will not be able to have cell phones in the school.
Ah.
You could check them at the office, but they're not having them in their bag. They're not having them in their locker. The cell phones, if that's part of the challenge for teachers and students these days, they won't have them in the classroom.
All right.
I mean, maybe that doesn't work. I haven't been a teacher.
And you haven't been king.
No.
There's time.
The paperwork is tied up in Cook County.
Yeah.
Diane, you wanted to say what? You are on the air. Hello.
Hi. I wanted to say that I agree with everything you had to say about the teachers. And I wanted to tell you another thing. Another bonus the teachers have besides having all that time off in the summer, my neighbor has three children, school-age children. She likes, I'm not saying she's boasting, but she says one of the perks of her job is that she's never had to pay for daycare, because when they're out of school, she's out of school and she can watch them. So she doesn't. So that's something, you know, it's not all these bad, and she loves her job, and that's one of the things she says, is she gets her summers and her holidays off. So, you know, yes, I understand the work in the evenings and maybe after work, but we all bring a little work home sometimes, but not all of us get 2 to 2.5 months off in the summer and Christmas break, and we never have to pay for daycare, yet we can have children.
Thank you for the call.
Asterisk,
Anthony,
unpaid.
Yeah.
At CPS, they don't get paid for summers.
No, but how does that work? I mean, you have a contract. It says, here's how much we're going to pay you. Then do the teachers have the choice, Jen? Because
no, they don't. Yeah. That was taken away in 2012 in the negotiations.
So
the
my question was, do they get a 9-month or a 12-month?
Nine-month.
So no matter, even if you'd like to have it prorated over 12 months, they don't do that.
No, they won't allow
it. So you have to budget accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's they do get a week of pay during the two-week Christmas break, and they get a week of vacation pay during spring break. But the entire summer is unpaid. They're paid based on an hourly rate. They're hourly employees. 7.5 hours per day is what they are paid upon. And they are laid off in the summer, but they don't have the opportunity to do an unemployment type deal.
But if your contract said, all right, you're working at step whatever, and it's $75,000 or $52,000 mm-hmm. or whatever it is, then you do get that. You just get it in 9 months rather than over 12.
Yes.
So it's a budgeting issue more than it is for the rest of us.
Yeah, it's definitely a budgeting issue, but it's just something that's a lot different than any other district in the state or in the nation.
I would definitely give them the option. I don't know why they do that.
It was...
How hard is that? I mean, it's just an accounting thing. Just have somebody make a computer program and go do.
I believe what it kind of came off as was a punishment by the previous administration for the strike. And that's what it appeared to be for.
One of the things that was had to be agreed upon, huh?
Yeah. So didn't end up being like that.
That's where we are today. News again at 2 o'clock. It's 1:42. That's not why Phil is here, though. It's nice to see you, Phil.
Thank you.
Last time you were on, we said, okay, we're going to do our Phil's Flash Fry, the popular feature where you just take on all comers, suggestions, and questions about all foods and locales.
Yes.
We even have a little jingle for it. Producer LF, are we ready with the Phil's Flash Fry jingle?
Mm-hmm.
So here's how it goes. We'll play this. You call in 312-981-7200, or you can text. We'll start with some from last week we didn't get to. But if you've got a food recommendation you want Phil to know about, or if you've got a date night you're trying to maximize, or friends are coming in from out of town, if you've got a question about the restaurant business in Chicago, Phil is here to answer it in 3, 2, 1, woof.
I'm going to eat right my vegetables. I'm going to chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all.
This one comes from out of state,
my
Phil.
Favorite.
All right.
Guy said that he's a little older than he used to be, which will happen. He said he doesn't have the sense of taste and smell he used to. Is that a problem for you? You're not a real old man, but as you age, is it harder to be a restaurant critic?
I don't know. I'm not aware of any difference in my taste buds, but someone else would say, yeah, bud, you've lost a few million, and, you know, who knows?
No. Maybe your sense of taste isn't as acute, but I guess you still know, relative to other foods, what you like or don't like.
Right.
What's good
memory.
Or what isn't good.
Right. And I suppose over time, someone can be more tolerant to, say, hot spices or less tolerant to them. And some things you could handle at 25, maybe you don't handle so good at 55.
Yeah, a little bit less. 312-981-7200. Last week, somebody said, hey, where can I get good German food in this town? And you said, it's not a great German food town. What's your recommendation?
Yeah, not anymore. There are a few that are still around. Of course, the Berghoff, the granddaddy of them all, that basically is still here in the loop on Adams Street. There's Lachette's Inn. 2119 West Irving Park Road, still fighting a good fight as restaurants back and forth around them are going under. In Norwich, just on the edge of the city, there's Edelweiss, also on West Irving, but that's 7600, so it's out there.
West.
So we're actually in Norwich at that point. Also good. And if you're not too strict about how completely always authentic your German is, Funkenhausen. Is a lot of fun.
Where's Funkenhausen? What is that?
It's a West. It's by. I just blanked on the chef's name. It takes the chef's German heritage and his Southern upbringing, and he sort of does a little of everything. But one thing that Southern food and German food have a real nice crossover on is pork. And so he has a great charcuterie plate, and then he has he'll have maybe pork rouladen on the menu, and he'll do some other things. It's all done with, there's lots of porcine jokes throughout the menu.
Oh, really?
And
yeah.
On the wall. So if you're like strictly you know, authentic, I want my authentic German, this might not be the place for you. But if you like the flavors and can handle a little fun at the same time.
You know where I ran into a little of that? Two different cultures or cuisines kind of merging was at Joe Madden's place. At Madden's...
Yes, Madden's Post.
Right there in the corner of Waveland and Clark. Because his heritage is what, Polish and Italian, I think it is?
Right. Joe, heavily Polish, and because the restaurant is fronted by Tony Montuano,
right,
House Biagio and restaurant, they've got some of this. They've got a little Polish, and they've got... And Tony was telling me, what's the difference between ravioli and pierogi when you get right down
to it?
That's
a good point, yeah.
Not a whole lot. So if you can do one, you can do the other, and they have a lot of fun with it. When I was growing up as a kid in New York, one of the things I loved for Sunday brunch was blueberry blintzes, and they do at the brunch at Madden's Post a blueberry pierogi that reminds me of the blueberry blintzes I ate when I was a kid.
We were there and had the flatbread pizza the other day on a walking tour from, what is it, HungryPlanetChicago.com. And the pizza, the flatbread pizza at Madden's is good. I thought it was really, really well done. Lisa, you had a question for Phil Vitale. You're on WGN. Hi, Lisa. You're on the air.
Hi, Phil.
Hi.
How are you guys doing? I just wanted to let you know that I have another favorite German restaurant in Lincoln Square, Himmel Chicago, owned by Diane and Carol Himmel. They're the Himmel sisters from, originally from Germany.
Oh,
amazing.
Right.
Amazing homemade German food from their mom's kitchen.
A little bit of Italian as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Still a little bit of Italian. Used to be the former pizza DOC, but they have used this fantastic wood fire oven that they have, and they cook the duck in it. They start their pork shanks in it.
And this is called Himmel's.
Himmel's.
H-I-M-M-E-L-S.
Yeah.
Himmel's in Lincoln Square, huh?
Yeah, Himmel, Chicago, and 2251 West Lawrence Avenue. Yeah,
Lawrence.
They're awesome.
Very good to know, Lisa. Thanks for the call.
Good thinking. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
If I may, 1709 West Chicago is where Funkenhausen is. I apologize for blanking on where to find Funkenhausen. 1709 West Chicago Avenue.
Hey, Phil writes 480. What's up with Dickas downtown? I don't know what's up with Dickas downtown. Are they doing something different over there?
No, there was a story in the paper, not by me, that they just extended their lease by a year.
Oh, I saw that, but just for 1 year.
Right, which is an interesting. I didn't get too deep into that, so I'm not sure. Usually, when you extend by 1 year, maybe you're not going to hang around for a second year. But I really don't know.
I go by there more than I go in there, but
right.
It seems to me like it's always a going concern.
His place out in Oak Brook is doing big business last I looked.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's a good steakhouse.
Hey, John, where can I find good Filipino food, or Philippine, it says here, food in Chicago?
Is that a lot different?
You talk about Korean food a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Chinese food and Japanese food. Is Philippine food going to be a lot different than Chinese, Japanese, or Korean?
Yeah, it is. It's Southeast Asia. It's more of a melting pot cuisine that you'll see inference. You'll see some similarities, but yeah, it's a completely different sort of thing. I would send someone to, there's Isla Filipa restaurant. Isla Filipina, sorry. Little Quiapo. Just opened another Cebu on North Avenue.
That's S-A-B-U?
C-E-B-U.
C-E-B-U, yeah, on North Avenue.
Yeah, it's a big city in Philippines.
We didn't even get to ones that came in last week. We've got some phone calls and more texts. If you've got a question, a comment, a food observation for Phil, the Flash Fry continues on WGN. Phil Vitale, restaurant critic, Chicago Tribune, is in our studio. 224 texted in, does Au Cheval live up to the hype? I've been wanting to try it for a while. Au Cheval on Randolph and Halstead?
Yeah, 800 West Randolph. It's best known for its burger, which has iconic status by now. And the thing about it is that there are no reservations, so people show up and they wait upwards of an hour or more for a chance to go in there and get really good diner food and one of the best burgers in Chicago. But whether you are willing to wait an hour and three quarters, whatever, I mean, going back to the days of hot dogs when people got in line for 2-3 hours to get a sausage, if it's worth it for you, it's worth it
for
you.
Is it worth it for you?
No, no, I don't wait anymore. I don't wait. I don't want that.
But not because you're a restaurant critic, but because you're...
Because I'm Mr. Fussy Pants. I'm not waiting 2 hours for anything.
I'm guessing, though, that I could get a really good hamburger somewhere else in the city and not have to wait an hour and a half.
Correct.
Isn't part of the cachet of some of those places the wait? That's kind of what you...
Right.
I don't know what those people, if like they're... They all seem to be having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see them going, oh, you got to be kidding me. So I just wonder if that's part of the thing that... That they get away with it, you know?
Well,
I don't understand that.
25 years ago in Chicago, we had a slew of no reservations restaurants. You couldn't get a reservation at Frontera Grill. You couldn't get a reservation at, I'm trying to think, I don't think, Scusi, just all these places that, Mia Francesca, you didn't get reservation. So you go in there and you wait. And then you buy your 3-4 glasses of wine at the bar.
Okay.
And the advantage for restaurants, of course, is there's no... looking at the clock, wondering if the Anderson party is going to make it in the next 15 minutes. They just give the first available table to the people first in line.
But they're in the hospitality business. It would seem to me like there's a more hospitable way to treat your customers.
Well, as you see, and since then, we've kind of evolved past that no reservation restaurants. And places that get away with it are the ones that are very, very small. And, you know, a couple late tables or a couple of fours that show up as three. Oh, yeah, my buddy dropped out. It's just the three of us after all. Well, that sounds very reasonable, but now that restaurants lost 25% of the revenue they were hoping to get off that table, those things kind of get to restaurants. And the smaller you are, the less you're able to roll with those punches.
Evelyn, you're on WGN. What did you want to ask Phil Vitale?
Hi, Phil.
Hi.
Yes, I used to live in Lincoln Square and Ravenswood, and I love Thai food and had many fabulous places. But now I live up in Zion, Illinois, and I'm lost up here. I have to cook all the time, but is there any other great Asian restaurants that you know of, even between, like, Highland Park up north that you can recommend?
You may have stumped the band here.
You may have to come back next week on this one. Phil's good about his homework.
I may have to do my homework on that one, especially all the way out to Zion. That's a little more... it's a little
further north than you normally go. All right, so here's what
we're going
to do.
If it has to be Thai, or is it just anything? Because...
Could it be Asian? Does it have to be Thai?
Could it be anything?
It doesn't have to. No, it doesn't have to. I just thought even like the Highland Park area or Libertyville, whatever you recommend.
Yeah, well, Highland Park is loaded, and Libertyville has some, let's see, Libertyville has some really nice places. They have Milwaukee Taco, which is actually a very cute little place, but they spell Milwaukee the way it used to be, so it's M-I-L-W-A-L-K-Y, Milwaukee Taco, and right next to it, Oscar Lee's Barbecue, same chef, two restaurants in Libertyville. There's also Shaku, which is a better-than-average Japanese sushi place.
We're out of time.
Oops.
We'll pick it up here. I say this
so
every
many questions,
week.
So little time.
We'll pick it up here next
week.
Well,
it beats dead air, doesn't it?
It's always good with Phil Vitale. Thank you, Phil.
My pleasure.
ChicagoTribune.com/dining.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
But we do.
Here's John Williams.
Hi, it's John joining us now for the second hour. We got a couple of guests. We appreciate you joining us, too. We're here weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays.
Lord,
10 a.m. till 12 noon. Sun is shining. We got blue skies downtown. I hope it's as nice where you are as it is where I am. If I look out the Studio A window, we're in Studio A today, where Ro and Steve and Bill and Wendy and Ann and all of them do their shows. And it's just lovely. Looking out onto Lake Michigan, there's a boat sailing out by Navy Pier. Light traffic on Lakeshore Drive. This town is a postcard, I'll tell you. It's a nice place to be. Yeah, we appreciate you tuning us in. Lots of texts on the show today, as always. You can call, too, you know, 312-981-7200. People still texting in about the teacher strike. Hey, John, 42 students per class is way too much, but there's 360,000 students and 25,000 teachers. That averages out to 14 teachers per student. The principal should even out the classes. That's not it. I've seen that math a number of times, but it's 25,000 teachers and teachers' aides. And I don't think it's just as simple as doing the division and presto, you've got the problem solved. Some schools have more, some schools have less, some schools need more, some schools need less. I totally believe that some of the teachers are over their heads with students and students who are busy these days, busier than you and I were when we were in school. The point I made, which I know agitated some of you earlier, is that this notion that teachers work so super hard makes it sound like everybody else doesn't. I believe everything teachers say and their advocates say about how hard teachers work. What I think gets lost is that makes it sound like they're the only ones doing that. I know so many people who are working so hard, so many hours, for not a lot of money these days. But teachers are too. I mean, let's just leave it at that. But if I had a magic wand on this one, I'd make sure that the teachers were not overwhelmed with responsibilities, at least in the classroom. About Ouija boards, John, my daughter won't touch a Ouija board. And the one I have in our closet, she wants me to give it away. It's going to the thrift store tomorrow. 630, John, the Ouija board is an occult implement. It's not to be messed with. People can unknowingly invite the demonic where it is not wanted. Well, I don't think that people want demonic anywhere. Do not mess with that. Mark sounds serious on this. Thank you for your text. So I'm a little confused about what's happening with Facebook right now, and there's a number of things. Writing about some of that is Peter Kafka. He's a senior correspondent at Recode, and he's a host of Recode Media, which is a podcast. I've been reading his stuff, and he's been following this Facebook story pretty closely. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
The first thing I wanted to talk about is Facebook going to flag stories that they believe are not true?
Yes. That is the simple answer to that question. They've been doing that a little bit. You probably haven't noticed it, in part because they're not doing a lot of it. And then when they do flag a story they think is not true, they weren't generally saying, hey, this is a not true story. They would use sort of a euphemism for it. And one of the things they've announced, and they did put out a big blog post this week, said, here's what we're going to do to ensure election safety. And one of them was, we're going to be, when we think something's false, when we've asked experts to weigh in and they tell us it's false, we'll flag that much more prominently. We'll say this is basically fake news.
If it pops up in my Facebook feed, how would that appear originally anyway? Like, would it be a story from CNN, say, and somebody at Facebook said CNN's spin on this is not true? Or would it be just somebody writing randomly? I mean, what content are we talking about?
We're generally talking about a story published by a CNN or a Huffington Post or a Breitbart, name your outlet, that if someone had flagged and said, I don't think this is true, Facebook has this process where they hand the story off to a third-party fact-checker, which is sort of a side story about how they get those folks to actually do that work. And they look at it, and if they come back and they say, we declare this story to be untrue, basically Facebook's sort of putting a stamp on it, saying this has been declared untrue by someone, not us, but someone has declared this story to be not true. If you just want to write a post declaring that the Comet Pizza Shop in Washington is home to pederasts, they're not going to flag an individual person creates. They're looking at sort of news stories.
How do you think that's going to go?
Well, it's been going, and you probably haven't noticed it. And I think the thing is, there's probably not a lot of news stories published on Facebook in the grand scheme of things that are decisively not true. There's lots of stuff that's misleading. It's in the gray area. That stuff's going to stay there. And Facebook really doesn't want to be an arbiter of that stuff. It really makes them squeamish. They're really looking for things that are sort of objectively untrue. You may remember from the 2016 election, there were fake news stories published by fake publications, things that literally didn't exist. Something called the Denver Guardian was a great example of that, saying that the Pope had endorsed Donald Trump.
Right.
And that's the thing, you could fact check and declare that to not be true. And you could Facebook then does a couple of things. They, one, will put this warning label over it. And two, they'll try to sort of using their levers and dials, try to discourage that story from being distributed that widely within Facebook. They won't prevent you from sharing it. But they'll say, if you want to share it with your friends, they'll say, you know, this is not true. Do you want to go ahead and share it anyway? You can go ahead and do it if you want.
Do they get into individual speech by individuals? So if the president or Adam Schiff or Nancy Pelosi or somebody says something that is factually not true, are they going to out that detail within a legitimate story?
No, if you're reporting a story about Donald Trump and he says we've secured all the oil in the Middle East, we own it all, that's what Donald Trump said. They'll run it. That's just straight ahead news reporting. They're talking about a claim made sort of by the author of the news story, by the publisher of the news story. That's objectively not true.
And
this is really designed to prevent sort of the most gross misrepresentations of fact.
Yeah.
Facebook is still not going to be sort of an encyclopedia where you can reliably think that everything published there is true.
And even if that were their objective, I mean, imagine how impossible that would be. And even if you got it right 100% of the time, 50% of the people wouldn't like your opinion about it. So it strikes me, if you go down that road, it's kind of a no-win proposition.
They're spoken like very much like a Facebook executive or a Facebook engineer. they really don't want any part of this. They're very uncomfortable with the idea they're being asked to sort of weigh in,
right,
and promote certain kinds of content or prevent certain kinds of content. Now, of course, you can go down that road a bunch of different ways. They don't distribute pornography. They have very long list of things that advertisers can't do. You can actually find this list on the site. It's quite funny. It includes, like, using bad grammar. So they make all kinds of decisions about content they do and don't want on the site, but they really don't want to be seen as censors and particularly political censors.
Well,
they find that very unnerving.
Yeah, yeah. And is this mostly, though, then going to go after, say, somebody in North Korea, somebody in Russia, somebody that wants to manipulate an election or just stir unrest in the United States? A foreign government would create a, you know, online magazine, quote unquote, and then start to lob all sorts of garbage out there. They could. This would catch that, wouldn't it?
Depends, but yes. And that's definitely something, again, post 2016, the idea of foreign meddling is a real concern for Facebook. And they've even got a funny term for it, inauthentic coordinated behavior. And where they're not really so much focused on what these people are saying, but the fact that it is clearly, in this case, on Monday they announced this, three groups from Iran and one group from Russia who were clearly coordinating sort of fake posts created by fake users, and they weren't meant to sort of either persuade you to think one way or another, or just like you said, to promote sort of dissension in general. And they're trying to crack down on that, and they say they're making progress on it.
Sort of like the Republicans that stormed the secure room today, at least you can monitor the process if you can't dispute the content. So at least it's the means by which they're doing it. They can catch that, it sounds like.
That is what they're saying. And they're saying that actually, in the case of these four rings of inauthentic coordinated behavior that they tracked on Monday, they made great efforts to say, look, we don't even really care what they're saying. What matters to us is they're trying to manipulate Facebook. So we're going to boot them out for that reason alone.
What about political ads on Facebook? Is there any new language about how Facebook's going to monitor that?
So this is the thing that is sort of front and center right now for Mark Zuckerberg. He says it's actually not a new policy. It's been around, but it's in the news now. Elizabeth Warren has been highlighting it. And the exception to making things up on Facebook and publishing false news is if you are a politician and you buy a political ad, Facebook is not going to fact check that at all. So Warren intentionally created a fake ad to highlight that. There's a lot of focus on a campaign ad that the Trump campaign Republicans have been pushing, making claims about Biden. And Facebook has said, look, we're not touching that. You could buy the ad. You can say what you want. By the way, this is what happens on TV right now anyway. We don't want to censor political speech, period. And we think journalists should be the ones fact-checking this, and readers should make up their own mind. And they're very insistent on this, even though they're getting a ton of grief for it.
What's your take on that?
There's one argument that says, oh, this is their craven, and they're doing it for the money. It's a bunch of money, but Facebook makes about $55 billion in advertising, so Facebook could live without political advertising money, and they wouldn't really notice it. A slightly more cynical argument would be, or another cynical argument would be, they're already getting grief from both the left and the right over what happens on the platform now. If they essentially banned some political advertising, they'd get even more grief. So, of course, they can't do that. And the third thing, and this is what Mark Zuckerberg says out loud, but it's also what Facebook executives that I talk to believe, is that Mark Zuckerberg genuinely believes that this is the right path, that Facebook doesn't want to be deciding what's right and what's not, and that political speech in particular is very important. And it'd be easier for him to not have this debate and just not run political ads at all, but he thinks it's important. He's pretty stubborn. It's worked for him in general. He's got a very sort of engineering mind where everything's, you know, a zero or one and black and white. And he thinks this is actually a pretty clear path for him to go down.
It's a shame to me, although I don't know how, here again, I was talking to you a moment ago about how would you score the truth in news. Political ads would be even more perilous. So I'm sorry to see that. But I think we've been living with that longer than our listeners may know. I mean, radio and TV does not regularly monitor the truth of political ads that we run, if I'm not mistaken. I actually sent a...
You're actually required to run them.
That's my understanding. Yeah.
Right. And that's what Facebook points out. Now, that's the specific FCC regulation, which doesn't apply to Facebook, but Facebook says, you know, we think actually that's a pretty good standard. And if it's good enough for TV, it should be good enough for us.
I guess the sorrow of it all is that truth seems to be so arbitrary. I mean, arbitrary might even be soft peddling it. It's not a commodity that's valued in political speech these days. It just doesn't even matter. So you'd like to see somebody push back somewhere besides four Pinocchios, and even then people disagree about the people that are writing those.
The fact that we don't have a shared set of facts is very worrisome. Facebook has certainly contributed to that problem, but they didn't create it. There's various political actors who are taking advantage of that. And whatever laws we set up, however we regulate Facebook, this is a long-term societal problem. I think it's a big one.
We talk about Facebook as though it was a public utility, though. Do you think that that's a fair analogy? I've always thought they were a private company, and Zuckerberg can do whatever he wants. What's your take on how we should govern Facebook?
They are certainly a private company for now. There's very little regulation around them right now. There is certainly going to be more regulation coming, whether it's federal, whether it's there's several different antitrust investigations going on. There's going to be some sort of regulation, and Facebook and all of Silicon Valley sort of said, okay, we ignored Washington for a long time. We realize we can't do that anymore. We're going to get regulated. Their line generally is, we'd like to have regulations that we can sort of follow, you know, throughout the U.S. and ideally throughout the world, so we don't have to have a different set of rules in California that we do in Missouri, et cetera. And again, if you're cynical, you think, you know, these kind of rules will actually benefit companies like Facebook and Google, which are already entrenched, which can afford, you know, an endless supply of lawyers and compliance experts. By the way, Facebook has already agreed to a $5 billion fine for privacy violations. And that sounds like a lot of money to you and me, but Wall Street just sort of shrugged when Facebook got that fine. I said, that's fine. They can handle that. So there's going to be regulation. I don't think we're going to see the internet regulated in the same way that the phone lines are. I just don't think we have that sort of consensus, and I don't think there's that desire to have that level of regulation.
This is only maybe slightly related to what you and I are talking about, but is there... You know, the Washington Post has this thing where they count the president's lies. They literally have a tracker. And I look at that now and then, and some of them are, I think you could put them in a lot of different buckets, right? Some of them are, he said 57 when he meant 27, or at least he should have said 27, but 57 came out of his mouth. I don't know if that's a lie or not. I make that mistake a lot. But I don't have 11,000 of them in the public record over the last 2.5, 3 years, and Donald Trump does. Is there any way that you recommend for people to sort of reconcile the truth with what the president says? I don't feel CNN is a great place for that anymore. And Lord knows HuffPo and Fox News are on other sides. So I'm not sure where to go to sort of boil it down, you know?
I mean, look, if you have the impulse to actually go investigate this stuff for yourself and you've got an open mind, that's a great start. You're more than halfway there. Because the truth is there's lots of reputable places, and you can sort of do your own triangulation and say, well, I know Fox News is a little biased in this way and HuffPo is biased here, but maybe there are some common sets of facts if you want to go look for them. You want to be careful what corners of the internet you're looking for. You're not looking for things that confirm your bias necessarily. what's much more worrisome to me is that people aren't bothering to do that work. They're either accepting information from source A or source B, which says the opposite. They don't bother to look at the other side, and they just sort of move on. Or the other version of that is they say, well, both sides disagree, so the truth must be somewhere in the middle. And in many cases, there is a correct answer and there's a false answer, and you shouldn't sort of add them up and divide them in half.
Back to Facebook for a minute. Is there anything else on the Facebook front that we should be paying attention to right now?
Well, Mark Zuckerberg has spent about 5 hours, I think it's still going on, in Washington today, getting grilled about, in theory, he's getting grilled about Libra, which is a cryptocurrency plan that Facebook has said it wants to do. And you can tell sort of the political environment, because a lot of the commentary has nothing to do with Libra at all, but has to do with political ads, et cetera. You know, I think if you're a regular person, you probably don't need to spend a lot of time thinking about cryptocurrency and blockchain right now, but it's interesting that Facebook has proposed it. And then on Friday, Facebook is going to roll out a news service that'll sort of sit within Facebook. They're going to call it a news tab. And all this really is going to be sort of a list of curated news stories and headlines. What's important there for the news industry is Facebook is actually going to pay some of the publishers, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, BuzzFeed, some other ones, for the rights to send readers to their publications, which is pretty interesting. Facebook has resisted this for years. And I think this is them saying, one, news is important to them, and also, two, again, more cynically, to say it's not the worst thing to throw a little money towards the people who are writing about us all the time.
No kidding. Oh, really? That's it's funny. I was with you until about the last few words of that sentence, because I'm an advocate for paying for journalism. I'm an advocate for paying for talk radio, for crying out loud. I think it's too easy to get it too free too often. Why would you pay for it if you can get it for free? But I think that's a business model that everybody knows is disintegrating, and yet people really want that information. So I'm every now and then just throwing up this flag saying, people, at some point, you have to pay for information. If Facebook is going to throw a couple of nickels the Wall Street Journal's way, I'm encouraged by that, right?
30 seconds. Yeah, I think as a journalist, I'm biased, but I think it's objectively a good thing to pay for news. And also, Facebook is paying the journal for news that the journal has already made. They're not making them create a new product for them. And Facebook is also not going to interfere with the Wall Street Journal's existing business model, which is to charge people directly for news. So Facebook is essentially saying, all right, we're going to give you a free Wall Street Journal article. And then after that, you got to pay for the Wall Street Journal just like you would any other time.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty clean deal.
Peter, it's nice to talk to you. Peter Kafka is a senior correspondent at, am I saying it right, Recode?
You got it.
R-E-C-O-D-E, Recode, host of Recode Media, which is a weekly podcast. Do join us again. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me. Horse is in the bag.
Really? Really? The boost is black to match. Riding on a horse. You can whip your Porsche. I've been in the valley. You ain't been up off that porch. Now, can't nobody tell me nothing. Ella, what are you doing here?
I'm playing Lil Nas X. Lil Nas X is the second gay musician in history whose song has gone diamond. That is for Old Town Road, which you're listening to now. The first was Elton John.
Oh, I was going to guess, and I don't think I would have come up with Elton John. Diamond is higher than gold, higher than platinum. It's diamond? Is that, what, a bazillion listens or something?
It's 10 million streams.
10 million.
Or downloads, sorry, and purchases online. It can be in any, through any medium.
Second gay artist to go diamond. Elton John won.
He was the first, and it's been predicted that Lil Nas X will compete for Record of the Year at the Grammys in 2020. If he wins the category, he'd be the first black gay artist to do so.
Or at least the first admittedly black gay artist.
But yeah, that's fair. But with that aside.
Yeah, John, don't complicate things. It's a sweet story. So I love this song. What a fun song this has been this year. All right, thank you for that, Producer Elif. We'll keep you posted on that. About our guest just a moment ago, we were talking about Facebook and the monitoring of media and stuff like that. 708 texted in and said, John, if you have to pay for the media, and I was advocating that you do, then only the wealthy could get media. Oh, what a bunch of hooey. People have been buying newspapers as long as there's been coins. So I don't think that the cost, at least the way I'm imagining it, when I get to be king, we're all going to be charged per click. Click on a story on Facebook. Click on a story on HuffPost. Click on a story on Fox News. It charges you every single time you click to a third source. It won't charge you much. I'm imagining at the end of the day, rampant though you're clicking be, your bill is going to be 74 cents, which is about what you used to pay for a newspaper. And then all of those little micro coins are going to collect, and eventually the Tribune and WGN Radio and other media sources whose information you use for free will get paid. And we'll all be better for it. There's a lot of wires to cross there, but that's my grand scheme. John, all politicians lie. We're talking about monitoring the truth in ads excessively. 847 says it's not just the president. Fact-checking sites and services, politicians precedes Trump. It wasn't a new concept. They all lie. They lie to us because we punish them for the truth we don't want to hear, or they lie because the truth isn't good enough. Please stop the I'm surprised at the lying business like you were born yesterday. Thank you for that. John, the Ouija board, I know it's wrong, has absolutely no power to do anything except burn down a building should it be deliberately set on fire. The rest is all in your head. Okay, Ernie, so Ouija boards have no power in the real world. Tell that to my last 32 texters about their Ouija board stories. I'm reading this from Huffington Post today. Chicago teachers on day five of a tense strike. Writes Rebecca Klein in an article I didn't pay for. They're largely fighting for lower class sizes and commitments from the district to hire more support staff, like nurses and counselors. But the mayor's office has said that the price tag for these demands is untenable, especially in a city facing a severe budget gap. A poll from the Chicago Sun-Times and ABC7 found that residents were more likely to blame the city for the strike than the teachers. I keep reading that. It doesn't sound that way on the calls and on the text lines, maybe because I've been fanning those flames, but fair enough. A poll from the Sun-Times says this is the city's problem to fix. It's not the teachers that are on strike. And one thing that I've been talking about a lot, maybe too much, is the fact that a lot of the student-athletes are not going to get to play their games. One of our listeners sent me a text, and he said Solorio, no, this is in an email, Solorio, which is a Chicago public school, is the favorite in the Class 2A soccer, which won a state title in 2017. Solorio is going to be denied taking the field against De La Salle, and De La Salle will get the forfeit win. If they were to play, Solorio would probably win 10-0, this emailer writes. So the team is going to show up at 4:30 this afternoon. They'll have their uniforms on. They'll be standing on the sidelines to play the game. And then they won't be playing because the schools won't let them. And so though they're there and their opponents will be there, it'll be declared a forfeit and they will lose. The kids will be standing right there. Jessica Contreras, back to the Huffington Post story, is the mother of a student who had to sacrifice playoff games as a result of the strike. And she joins us on WGN. Hey, Jessica, it's John Williams. Thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well.
So that's the story. Anything you want to add to sort of what I've been reading there? What are you hearing?
It's basically all true. Our kids are being denied something that they have been working hard, not only this year, but for the past 4 years. I have a senior who's one of the top scorers in CPS at this moment, and he's being denied to play just as well as his teammates. And to see them hurting, as a parent, it hurts tremendously. I sat with my son. We've cried.
Your son?
Because this has been, you know, such a rough season for him. He's been playing hurt. He's been playing sick. Not only him, a lot of the players. A lot of the players sacrifice a lot. And for them to, you know, for them to go through this, it's disgusting. It disgusts me as a parent. You know, I'm not against the strike. I love all the teachers. I love what they do for the students. But at what cost is this strike for? You just sacrifice all these scholarship opportunities for these students. You know, I'm not blaming the teachers. You know, it's nothing but, you know, politics between the mayor, the CEO, Ms. Janice Jackson. you know, the union, and it's destroying these kids. You know, IHSA, you know, not letting them play. And some of these kids are taking it like if it's, you know, it's an insult because all their hard work has been thrown to the garbage.
Yeah. Jessica, your son goes to George Washington, is that correct?
Yes.
Are they going to do what the kids at that other school did? Are they going to stand on the sideline?
We did that yesterday.
Oh, that was yesterday for you? Oh, yeah, that's right.
We showed up at Brooks yesterday with the uniforms on, stood on the field, waited for the team to show up. No team showed up. To my knowledge, if a team shows up and the other team doesn't show up, that means the other team forced it. So what does this conclude? Washington should have been handed the win.
But Washington had to forfeit because they're a CPS school. Who was the team that they were scheduled to play that day?
They were scheduled to play the Evergreen Park Mustangs.
And is Evergreen Park a Chicago public school?
No.
So even though they didn't show up, they get the win.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Your son is a senior. I've heard about him and that he is one of the better soccer players in the city. Is there a chance for him to play soccer in college?
Yes.
And
yes, there is.
Has he been, you know, I hear that the kids might lose a scholarship as a result of this, but it seems to me that if a kid is good enough to maybe get to play at a university or college, you know, the scouts already know about him. I presume he's already been talking to schools, right?
Right, but I'm not also fighting for my son. If he has a scholarship, regardless or not, I'm speaking on behalf of all the Washington Patriot parents. That because some of these families don't have the income to send their child to a 4-year university. They don't have the access like other families.
Let me ask you this then, Jessica.
I'm speaking on them on their behalf.
I understand.
Well. I'm defending them.
I understand that. So just to be clear though, since your son's team forfeited because of the strike, if the strike is settled today, his season is over regardless, right?
At the moment, I am not sure, but I know that if the strike was ended today by 12, I'm assuming they were going to get a chance to play tomorrow, but I think as of now, yeah, our team is definitely done.
Okay.
But we will show up tomorrow to tomorrow's game as well.
Really? The game that you would have been playing or just the next game in the tournament?
The next game.
Yeah. Last thing you want to say? I mean, so we're talking on the radio. A lot of people are listening to you. You're a frustrated parent. What's the last thing you want our listeners to hear, Jessica?
You know, I want them to know that these kids work very hard. And it's not about just the game. It's about the love and the passion and the effort they have put these past 4 years, especially the seniors. It's not about having compassion. It's about them getting out there and showing what they're made of. And unfortunately, you know, people in higher office are not letting them do so.
What's your son's first name, Jessica?
Angel.
Angel. Oh, that is so. Angel Contreras, George Washington.
No. He's Angel Arismendis.
I see. Okay. At George Washington. My best to you all. My best to your son. I hope he plays well and much next year and the year after and the year after at some school. But I appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you guys for allowing me to speak. Thank you.
It's 2:49 on WGN. We started the show today talking a little bit about sports in Chicago, and we weren't talking about boys soccer. We were talking about David Ross being now the new manager of the Chicago Cubs. It's not official yet, but it sounds like it's all but a done deal. I see Kevin Powell just strolled into the sports box.
Yes, sir.
When is that thing going to be? When are the Cubs going to make the announcement?
Well, we might get an email announcement. I don't know if we'll have an official press conference or an introductory. Not that really we need to be introduced to David Ross, but you know, the formal press conference when a hiring like this goes down. They may wait until after the World Series to do that.
Have they confirmed it, though?
I haven't gotten official? An official press release.
Me neither,
like
yeah.
That, so. But I did see that the news TV trucks are already posted up outside Wrigley, maybe to catch a sighting of David Ross heading back into Wrigley to make things official. But I love the hiring, John. I do. And I'm actually surprised, just looking on, kind of scanning through social media, how many Cub fans aren't completely on board with this.
Well, let me read you some text.
Yeah, okay.
You got a second?
Yeah.
Lots of texts about, well, a lot of topics today. 312, by hiring David Ross, they're giving those men a friend, not a manager. Kevin Powell, WGN Radio Sports, you like this hire.
I do. I think they're giving him a friend, but David Ross was well known for calling out teammates for not playing the game right. There are multiple instances when he chewed out teammates for not hustling.
Been lost on me. I've been saying this is a bad hire for this reason, and I don't recollect that. I don't know that story well enough. I'm glad you're saying that.
Well, he was the leader of that team. I mean, I know he has the Grandpa Rossi image for a lot of fans, but he was that veteran catcher, and catchers so often go on to manage because they see the game unfold differently than everybody else on the diamond. So they have a good grasp of how the game of baseball should be played, but he was always known as the disciplinarian or whatever you want to call it. I mean, he chewed guys out, and as lovable as he could be and as likable as he was, if you're a fan,
yeah,
I don't think you should be worried about him just kind of rolling over. That's the opposite of what the Cubs were looking for, where I think a lot of criticism towards Joe Maddon was over the past couple of years. That's kind of what it turned into.
But I think that's why a lot of us thought, oh, good, Joe Girardi, because Girardi has a lot of these boxes checked, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, local guy, East Peoria anyway. Well, he played for the Cubs, et cetera. And doesn't Girardi have a World Series ring? So
he does. You know, the knock on Girardi when he was outed from the Yankees manager spot was that he wasn't great with the younger players and adapting to the times, the current way baseball is played. Whether that's true or not, that was the narrative when he was outed as the Yankees.
Well, how does
manager.
Ross get around that?
Because he's only 3 years removed from playing in this modern day game. You know, it's I'm just a big fan of it. I think it checks the boxes where he does immediately fit right into the culture, which I don't think they need some culture shock. There's still currently 10 guys on the roster that won a World Series, and your core guys, the Baez, the Rizzos, the Bryants, those guys are still there. They know what it takes to get to a World Series. It's not like they need now what they needed when Joe Maddon was brought in 5-6 years ago, which was a complete culture shock to that organization and to the players in the locker room. They don't need that here. This is a team that has a championship window that is very much open. So I think David Ross understands that. He fits right into the culture. Everybody loves him in the locker room already.
Yeah.
And then maybe he can, you know, maybe be a little more stern than Joe Maddon was.
262 is asking a question that I sort of asked Mark Carmen at the beginning of this show. David Ross is currently a Cubs fans hero. If he doesn't win, he's going to be, this texter says, hated. It's a big risk. I don't think hated's the right word, but I asked Carm how much pressure there's going to be on Ross now to turn this thing around.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. Hey, look, Joe Maddon's was the manager for the 2016 Cubs, who won the World Series after 108 years, and there were still fans that didn't like him over the past few years. I think in 10 years, when we look back on their run, I think it's going to be positive no matter what. It all depends on what unfolds. I mean, people would lose their minds over the way Joe Maddon managed the bullpen late in games over the past few years.
Yeah. Well, I think they'd rightly so.
In some cases.
I've got 30 seconds left, but yeah. I'll just say this. You can respond. I think that the Cubs are on the precipice of having missed an opportunity. Missed an opportunity, not with this hire, but generally with these players on the field, they should be deeper into the playoffs.
I 100% agree with that. I keep saying, watching the Astros play, I go, that's what we thought the Cubs were going to turn into, an absolute juggernaut.
You join Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantis and company. WGN Radio News is right around the corner. This is John Williams, our news click at WGNRadio.com. Like me on Facebook, I'm WGN King John, is going to ask you, what do you make of the hire? Hey, thanks for listening to my podcast. This is John Williams. I'm live weekdays from 1 to 3. And remember, our Mincing Rascals podcast drops Thursdays at 5. The Rascals is a round table of talkers and journalists. This year, judged best in the state by the Illinois Broadcasters Association.